This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 4th of May 2018. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 4th of May, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, before we start on the headlines, I'd just like to draw your attention to a letter which is enclosed with this recording in your wallet. It relates to the new data protection rules, and it's for you to retain. The text is actually as follows. I'll read it so that you don't have to read it if you don't want to, but you can pass it on to other people to see what we're saying. Dear WTN listener, I'm contacting you to advise you of our privacy policy, which has been prepared to meet the requirements of the new data protection regulations that come into force in May 2018. A copy of the privacy policy can be viewed on our website and will also be available in audio format on request. Under the new rules, we're required to take additional measures to protect individuals' personal data and privacy rights. Although we hold personal contact information about our listeners in order to provide regular recordings to you, we will not ask each listener for permission to keep in contact, as by continuing to receive our recordings and returning them to us, you will be agreeing to our privacy policy. This is what's termed legitimate interest under the new regulations. Please be assured we take our responsibilities for looking after your data very seriously, and we won't ever pass on your personal information to other organisations without your consent. And that's from our chairman, John Richards. Now we move on to the headlines, and they are Fatal Axe Attack and Unlawful Killing, Vibrant City Ranked Highly, and MP Pressing Over M3. So, Nikki, can we have the headline story number one, please?
Which is Fatal Axe Attack and, quotes, unlawful killing. A man is facing being detained in a mental health facility after he was found to have stabbed a man to death and hit him in the head with an axe. A jury took about an hour on Tuesday to decide that 36-year-old David Gray unlawfully killed Carl Scott following a five-day trial at Winchester Crown Court. Carl Scott's body was discovered in March last year, around a month after it is thought he died. But Gray, who did not appear at Winchester Crown Court throughout the proceedings, was not being tried for murder after he was deemed not fit to enter a plea last Tuesday. Instead, a jury was tasked by Judge Jane Miller, QC, with deciding whether he unlawfully killed Mr. Scott. Winchester Crown Court heard how Mr. Scott was left to die at Birch Court, Thurmond Crescent, Stanmore, after being attacked with an ornamental tomahawk axe and stabbed five times in the back. The jury was told how the 37-year-old was discovered on March 22nd by a friend who had grown concerned for his welfare. He had last been seen on February the 12th, with experts estimating he died around mid-February. Home Office pathologist Dr. Basil Perdue told the court that a cocktail of drugs may have been a factor in Mr. Scott's death and said that the injury to the head was caused by a heavy object with a well-defined edge, which fractured the left side of his skull. Dr. Perdue added, "There was evidence of a heavy blow. It would have required severe force." The jury also heard how Gray, of no fixed abode, had spoken with a number of people about the death, including Robert Edis, to whom prosecutor Kerry Malin said Gray had confessed his responsibility. In a police interview played to the court, Mr. Edis said, "All of a sudden he blurted out, 11 days he's been there. Afterwards, he said, he got an axe in his head and I locked him in there." He said Carl Scott was terrorising him with needles. Mr. Edis added that Gray had said Mr. Scott had taken him hostage. The court heard that Gray told Mr. Edis a number of graphic details about the death, including how he stabbed him too while a pair were smoking crack cocaine together at Mr. Edis's flat. According to Ms. Malin, Gray also spoke to two other people about Mr. Scott's death, asking one of them, "What would you do if you thought you'd killed someone?" The jury heard these people shrugged it off due to their knowledge of Gray, but it was noted that he had become more agitated closer to the discovery of Mr. Scott's body. Gray, who was a service user of drug addiction and homeless charity Trinity, Winchester, was detained under the Mental Health Act following an incident in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral. The jury was played recordings of 10 phone conversations he had with police while in detention, in which he repeated that he had been taken hostage. On Tuesday morning, the court was also told how both Mr. Scott, a known drug user, and Gray had previous convictions. Gray is now set to be sentenced to a hospital order detaining him in a mental health facility. Judge Miller QC added that it is possible criminal proceedings could be reopened in the future. And there's a terrifying photograph of this axe. It looks like a sort of bone with this spiky axe chopping bit coming out. I mean, lethal.
Vibrant city ranked highly. Winchester has been ranked highly in the index of the most thriving places in the region. The Vibrant Economy Index from the Grant Thornton reveals the city is placed 11th, whilst Basingstoke and Deane, Eastleigh and Southampton are in the top 20% in certain categories. Grant Thornton published the results of its annual Vibrant Economy Index that measures how places in England compare on factors that are measured not only economic but also social performance, from the prosperity to health, well-being and happiness, and inclusion and equality. According to the index, the South East stands out as the most vibrant region in England, with two-thirds, 45, of its local authorities' areas ranking in the top 40% nationally. Nearly half, 31, rank in the top 20%, and five are in the top 10. Winchester has just missed out on the top 10 position for the second year running, ranking 11th and placed in the top 20% for 5 out of 6 baskets. The health, well-being and happiness basket also sees a position 11th in England, suggesting a combination of affluence and economic factors are translating into a healthy and happy place to live, where everyone benefits from economic growth, says Grant Thornton. The dynamism and opportunity basket, which considers if there are the skill sets and entrepreneurialism to drive future growth, positioned Winchester 12th in England, with resilience and sustainability being the only basket Winchester falters on, being ranked 144th. Norman Armstrong, partner at Grant Thornton, said, "The vibrancy of any local place is about so much more than GDP, and the Vibrant Economy Index provides us with a way of identifying the opportunities for and the challenges to social and economic growth across the nation. We know that Winchester is always among the most popular places to live, and our index shows that it is leading the way in the South in so many other areas. However, what the index demonstrates for Eastleigh in particular is welcome and shows it is going in the right direction. Businesses choosing premises on the outskirts of Eastleigh rather than in the centre of the cities like Southampton, investment in local facilities such as the new Places Leisure Eastleigh, and its close proximity to excellent transport links is clearly encouraging those to celebrate it as their home."
MP pressing over M3. Winchester MP Steve Brine met Highways England in Parliament to discuss the major scheme to revamp Junction 9 of the M3. He was briefed on the feedback gathered during the recent consultation that threw up safety issues. The scheme will remove the Winnall roundabout, but mean that northbound traffic leaving Winnall and wanting to access the northbound A33, having to cut across carriageways of fast-moving traffic. Highways England will soon publish a report as Stage 2 draws to a close ahead of the preferred route announcement, expected in June. Mr. Bryan discussed the issue with Neil Andrew and Simon Hewitt, senior project members from Highways England, on the terrace of the House of Commons. He pushed for changes to be made around the A34-A33 crossover for motorists travelling from Eastern Lane towards Kingsworthy. Fears about the safety of this manoeuvre were consistently raised by residents and local organisations during the consultation, including from Winchester City Council. Other subjects for discussion included the protection and enhancement of the NCN23 cycle route, which passes through the junction, and continued engagement with the South Downs National Park, who have objected to the scheme. Mr. Bryan said, "I have been clear for years that this scheme is badly needed, but we need to keep on making the strategic case given the long gestation period and clear local as well as regional importance of getting this sorted. The proposals are generally excellent and will give my constituents a very real benefit, and we need change on the A34-A33 issue, and I was pleased to discuss that in some detail. We all look forward to seeing the preferred route, and in due course next year, the development consent process get underway. Work is due to begin on site in the summer of 2021.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, and first person and Belgarum. And then we'll have the announcements and what's on. So we'll start with the death announcements this week. Arnold, Winifred Arnold, nay Drew, who died peacefully on the 23rd of April, aged 89. Bartlett, Frank Emberlyn Bartlett, died on the 16th of April, aged 83. Blanchard, Evelyn Blanchard, died on the 20th of April at Countess Mountbatten Hospice. Gilmore, Ron Gilmore, died peacefully on the 18th of April, aged 76. May, Elizabeth May, died at home on the 22nd of April, aged 82. Robinson, Terence Robinson, died on the 22nd of April. Stamford, Reginald Frederick Stamford, known as Steve, died peacefully at home, aged 90. Stutchbury, Marjorie Stutchbury, died at Hamble Heights Nursing Home, aged 95. And Wilkinson, Fred Wilkinson, who was born in Winchester but died in New Zealand, aged 90. Okay, now we move on to Christian comment. Albie.
A Christian comment this week comes from the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson, who's the Canon Principal of Winchester School of Mission, under the heading Voting for the Right Person. It hardly feels like it was 2 minutes ago when we last had an election. Since we last voted for our Winchester City Councillors 2 years ago this week, we've had the tumultuous Brexit referendum and another general election. The turnout for the referendum was a whopping 81%, and it was 79% for last year's general election. However, the turnout for the last Winchester City Council election was only 43%. Does this mean we care less about what happens on our doorstep than what happens across our nation? The tireless local campaigners who drop leaflets through our letterboxes are all flagging up the same kind of issues: affordable housing, heavy traffic, safety on the roads, recycling, improving the environment, and making our city, towns and villages better places to live and work in. But what does all their work mean, and the validity of them representing us, if less than half of the electorate doesn't bother to turn out to vote? Research suggests that it is often the poorer members of our society who don't vote, not because they don't have strong views about who they support, but because they have lost trust in the democratic system working in their favour. Local city and district councils can make real and significant differences to our immediate environment. We should therefore turn out and vote in order to build up our trust in those who serve us on councils across the country and to make them more accountable to us for what they do or don't do. Who then are you voting for today? Who is the right person as far as you're concerned? Who can make our society a better place? Who are you saying yes to in the ballot box? Christians, believe it or not, think election is really important. However, the question is not, as we might suppose, whether we choose to elect Jesus as someone significant we want to worship and follow. In Christian faith, the electorate is not us, but God. And God has elected one person as the most important of all, Jesus Christ. So much so that he didn't want Jesus to die and stay dead. He raised him from death to show us a new kind of resurrection way of living. Jesus' resurrection life gives us a vision for society where people have dignity, wisdom, hope, and a significant relationships with people who never let you down. But that's not all. The amazing thing is that God has got more than one vote. He chooses to elect you as his representative. He wants you to make the world a better place by caring for the environment, by speaking up for those less wealthy than you are, by trying to work out how we can all help one another instead of being in competition with one another. If you're someone who accepts that God has elected you, then you're on his council. God is voting for you.
Thank you. Now we're going to move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, I think you got the first letter.
And this is from Kanmani Radhakrishnan. I'm headed pain study. Sir, chronic pain can have profound effects upon quality of life. Researchers at the University of Southampton are inviting individuals to participate in a study examining how chronic pain affects the processing of pain-related information. Individuals aged between 18 and 70 and who experience chronic pain are invited to take part in this study. We are also recruiting pain-free individuals as a comparison group. Participants will complete a series of simple computer tasks followed by some questionnaires assessing their emotions and pain characteristics. The study involves attending one session at the Pain Research Laboratory at the University of Southampton Academic Unit of Psychology. The experiment takes about 60 to 75 minutes to complete. If you are interested in participating or would like further information, please contact Kanmani Radhakrishnan, MSc Health Psychology student, via email. I shall read this twice slowly, okay? Lowercase kr2u17@soton.ac.uk. And again, all lowercase, kr2u17@soton.ac.uk. And again, that's from Kanmani Radhakrishnan, probably Sri Lankan, from Wessex Lane, Swathling, Southampton.
Many thanks. And this is by Daphne E. Smith of the Pastures Cheriton. Sir, when I was a child in the mid-1930s, my father took me to an exhibition with the main object of the show, a television set, which captured the attention of everyone. except me. I was not impressed by the fuzzy image on the tiny screen, for I had seen larger and clearer pictures in the cinema and could not understand what all the excitement was about as people jostled to see a better view of the novelty. A few more years passed before TVs became almost part of the furniture in our homes. I was grown up and married when we bought our first one, just in time to watch the coronation of the Queen in 1953. So much has happened since. We now have news from overseas beamed in live, watch sports and have the choice of many channels. However, some of us feel that during the last winter months, the quality of the entertainment is not as good as it used to be. What has happened to the excellent script writers who provided plays with good plots? One more complaint. Why do the producers of documentaries add the noise of piano keys being thumped by a giant hand? It is irritating and unnecessary. Presenters have recently started to finish their programmes by thanking viewers for watching. Is this an idea of their employers, perhaps worried by competition, or just good manners making a comeback into our lives? If the latter, then I really should join in and thank the Chronicle staff for accepting my efforts and those who read them when published. And that's from Daphne E. Smith, The Pastures in Cheriton.
Now, this letter comes from David Battier, St John Street, Winchester. Don't whinge, sir. In my first letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, I would like to express my gratitude to all councillors who give of their time to the city, whatever their politics. I would particularly like to thank those who hold two council position posts. The people listed by the Chronicle, letters April 26, have chosen to take on the workload of not one, but two representative roles. To hold down two council posts and a daytime job is deserving of immense admiration. Their giving of time, their commitment of concern deserve respect. So why does Mr. Hargraves, letters April 26, care about the external salaries of those who give to the people of Winchester? At what salary threshold does Mr. Hargreaves believe councillors can no longer have time to be a councillor? Does he have a set figure? Let us say £43,250 per annum, at which point they become ineligible. What is Mr. Hargreaves saying? You can only do a menial job and be a councillor? If you earn a good salary, you don't have time? An absurd notion. This is an irrational conflation of salary and availability. The two are independent. Maybe Councillor Todd earns a decent salary. I don't know. And maybe that is the case because he is smart, efficient, knows his brief, and makes decisions quickly. So why the hounding of Councillor Todd, Lib Dem, in particular? Personal experience? He gave a lot of his time to myself and Neighbours' rear planning issue, as did Councillor Chris Pines, Labour. Worthy councillors giving wise counsel in their own time. Some more personal knowledge. My niece works in the population health industry, her line being women's health. She speaks highly of the benefit to UK society of Councillor Todd's men's health charity. Criticising a decision or political viewpoint of a councillor is fair. Berating them for unsubstantiated unavailability is the politics of the mean. National politicians may gain glory and power. Local politicians will see little glamour and only fleeting fulfilment. Blessed to post holders. Be grateful. Be thankful. Don't whinge.
And this one from Jeff Bruty, entitled A City Tour. Sir, doubtless many Winchester residents enjoyed Professor Alice Roberts' TV programme about Winchester last week, But what a shame she concentrated solely on the Norman period and didn't demonstrate how the city has progressed since then. She could have commenced her tour at the magnificent Brook Centre, thronging with eager shoppers, passed by where the fountain once stood before the council discovered that people were throwing cigarette ends into it and demolished it, on into the busy King's Walk, past all the tasteful little shops, perhaps dropping off for some body piercing, and out into the bright sunlight of Silver Hill. From here, only a short walk up the charming little alley adorned with graffiti into our lovely High Street with all its empty shops and street traders. She could probably then have dallied in our refurbished bus shelter, waiting for the Arley number 86 bus, and maybe followed the progress of an empty crisp packet as it made its way smartly from one end to the other, assisted by the chilly wind that blows incessantly through. Sitting back in the bus, she could have enjoyed the scenery as they wound their way round past the derelict buildings of Friars Gate to St George's Street and along the congested one-way system. Eventually, the pollution of the town centre would be left behind as they travelled along the leafy old Roman thoroughfare, Andover Road, that is scheduled, for reasons known solely to Carla Holmes and the City Planning Department, to be diverted through the middle of a brand new estate of 2,000 houses. Finally, on her right, she would have reached her destination, Barton Farm, the new estate now renamed King's Barton. No, I don't know why either. And the programme would come to an end, leaving viewers to wonder at the vision of the planners who gave their endorsement to the erection of terraced houses, seemingly designed by a primary school child, at the top of a hill in this semi-rural setting. But that's Winchester for you, a town like no other. And that from Jeff Bruty, Manningford Close, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
Missed point. Sir, as the organiser of the plastic attack last weekend at Tesco, I would like to say how disappointed I am in our elected representative's response, Chronicle April 26. The final straw is indeed a brilliant initiative, and I have participated by dropping my plastic straws in Chococo during the amnesty weekend. However, this shouldn't mean that any other type of protest or behaviour changes wrong. The plastic attack was specifically about how we as consumers can change our habits right now to reduce the consumption of single-use plastics. Indeed, I provided the Chronicle with photos of two baskets of shopping, one done buying goods in plastic packaging and exactly the same products bought with no single-use plastic at all. If we were to change our habits, the supermarkets would work to change theirs. We all, businesses and individuals, face the challenge of how to reduce our use of really useful products that is really damaging the planet. And that doesn't even take into consideration that the raw materials used to produce the plastic are a finite resource. Mr. Brine has unfortunately missed the point of the plastic attack. I had thought that a Tory would appreciate the attempts for people to take personal responsibility rather than leaving it all to the government. As an aside, Tesco's were really great. They were informed in advance that this was not an attack on them. They left us alone to get on with it and provided a bin for the plastic we removed. And that was from Caroline Kirkham of Station Hill, Itchen Abyss.
And now a letter from Professor Robert Adam of Adam Architecture, Hyde Street, Hyde, Winchester, under the heading The Design Elite. Sir, there have been several complaints in your pages about the unsuitable designs of recent buildings. It would be useful for your readers to understand the background. In the last 60 years, there has been an almost universal belief in the architectural profession that in order to be modern, it is essential to be obviously different. This belief is now frequently shared by the planning profession. If you give architects and planners too much credibility or lead them to their own devices, you are likely to get buildings that are deliberately different. And this is what has happened. City councillors are elected to represent their constituents in planning, as in all matters. In recent years, they have either been browbeaten by their officers and professional advisers, or have simply delegated their powers to them. If, as seems evident, the people of Winchester do not agree that an international style or jarring contrast is appropriate for new buildings, then it is up to councillors to take appropriate action. Councillors should not be taken in by what is nothing more than an architectural theory. Modernity is inevitable. It can and has been traditional. Winchester is too precious to be destroyed by the theories of a design elite.
And this from D. Jones, Albrook, headed wrong way. Sir, being a resident of Albrook, I was recently called on by the Liberal Democrats canvassing for the forthcoming local elections. I raised the issue of the proposed new link road from the junction of Albrook Hill with Pitmore Road to junction 12 of the M3. It was confirmed that the road would be funded by developers for the 6,000 houses to be built at Fair Oak, but would still be restricted as no changes would be made to the railway arch, therefore restricting hire vehicles from access to or from the M3. I queried why the Allington Lane site at West End is no longer considered viable and was informed that the developers for that site would not make financial contributions to pay for new access roads at that location. I offered the possibility that even the new road with increased traffic is likely to increase congestion leading to Junction 12 and would increase traffic along Pitmore Road. I was advised that the bottom of Pitmore Road would be shut off, meaning all access for Boyett Lane, Pitmore Road, etc., would be from the junction with Winchester Road at Otterbourne Hill and would obviously result in the loss of the E2 bus service along Pitmore Road. It seems bizarre that splitting the parish of Albrook with a major link road that has limited use and loss of public transport could ever be considered a positive way forward. Whilst the traffic issues at Albrook Hill need to be addressed, pushing a new road through the middle of Albrook, through the middle of Albrook to accommodate thousands of more vehicles from the proposed housing development at Fair Oak cannot be the answer. And that from D. Jones, Pitmore Road, Albrook, Eastleigh.
And this is entitled A Cold Shoulder in the Cathedral, and it's from James Roper from Canberra, Australia. Sir, on Sunday, April the 22nd, I visited Winchester Cathedral, joining in one of their services. I regularly attend a church back home, but that's not why I visited. I visited because I thought it would be it'd be great to meet fellow Christians and to learn from different experiences. So the most important part of the service to me was the tea and coffee afterwards. I headed towards the area, gave my donation and got my tea. Now, I'm not a natural extrovert. I'm not very good at going up to people I don't know and introducing myself, especially when I'm in a foreign country on the other side of the world. So I kind of just walked around awkwardly, looking at the walls, reading various inscriptions. Everyone else seemed to be talking to each other, but I was alone. I saw a group of clergy and I thought at least they'll probably talk to me. So I made a particular point of walking very slowly past them, hoping one would stop me and say hi. I even made eye contact, but they looked just straight through me. I walked out of Winchester Cathedral feeling the loneliest I have felt in a long time. And there is a picture of Winchester Cathedral packed with a congregation. And it's a sad reflection that he felt so lonely when he left there.
Now, this letter comes from Sue McKenna, who is the chief executive of Trinity Winchester, Durngate, Winchester, under the heading Clarification. Sir, I'm writing in response to the Chronicle article on April 26, titled Proposals Submitted for new accommodation at Trinity Centre. Trinity Winchester works in close partnership with the Winchester Church's Night Shelter and Winchester City Council to provide vital services for homeless and vulnerable people in the community. The article may have given the impression that the difference between Trinity Winchester's new accommodation proposal and housing services offered by other providers, in particular the Night Shelter, is that these are not seen as a home. This is not the case, as anyone who is fortunate enough to be able to access the services provided by the Night Shelter will confirm. The Night Shelter is a vital stepping stone for those who are trying to escape homelessness and rebuild their lives, and their residents regard the shelter and support they receive as their home. Until they can be found suitable longer-term accommodation to meet their needs. We work very hard in collaboration with all local agencies to address people's underlying needs, to prevent the circumstances that lead to people living on the streets in the first instance. We are very excited about our new accommodation plans. If you would like to know more about it, please do contact me at Trinity email sue@trinitywinchester.org.uk or call 01962 828 635. That's 01962 828 635 for Sue McKenna, Chief Executive, Trinity Winchester.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. So now we're going to step back in time. Nikki, 200 years?
200 years. Monday, May the 4th, 1818. A robin has built her nest, laid 6 eggs, and is now sitting on them in a cupboard at the central school in this city, to which the boys have constant access and in which their books are deposited. She has been repeatedly in her nest during the school hours, undisturbed by the moving scene around her, and the children feel pleasure in watching instead of molesting or annoying her in the slightest degree. The second item, a weather sheep, the property of Mr. William Budd of North Street, Ropley, was stolen from a field in the parish of Bishop's Waltham on Tuesday night last, and the skin has since been found in the middle of a hedgerow, cut into pieces. A reward has been offered for the discovery of the robbers, and from the many depredations of this sort committed in this neighbourhood. It is much to be wished that the perpetrators of the crime may be brought to justice.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, May the 4th, 1918, prior to the commencement of the ordinary proceedings, the mayor remarked that there was a duty placed upon him which he had to carry out with deep regret, viz. to express their sense of loss which they had sustained by the recent death of Alderman W. H. Jacob. The late alderman was for 31 years a member of the council and the mayor of Winchester in the year 1889 to 1890, carrying out the duties of chief magistrate in a very dignified manner, and one befitting all the other actions of his life. He was a man of no ordinary type and no ordinary attainment, and one who possessed a great knowledge of the city and its surroundings, its history and its interests, perhaps more than anyone else. It was curious that a second well-known resident, the late Mr. F. J. Bagent, should have passed away within a week or so, thus rendering the city the poorer by the loss of two such men. The mayor proceeded to refer in detail to the great and valued services of the latter, Alderman Jacob, had given to the city. And the second item is, the mayor next informed the council that the watch committee on the previous day had a matter brought before them which they considered of such great urgency that they requested him to bring it before the council, although in the ordinary way it would appear in the minutes and come before the council at their next meeting. It referred to the considerable shortage of special constables in the city. That shortage arose from several causes. In the first place, the regular force had been depleted by men that had been taken into the army. At the most recent consideration of the matter, the authorities decided that the city force, which had already lost 10 or 12 men, must spare one more. One man lost from the regular force represented at least 6 or 7 special constables to carry out the duties one regular constable would do. There were also a number of special constables being called up for military service. There were others who had grown weary in well-doing and whom desired to be relieved of their duties, which they had carried out well.
50 years ago, Saturday, May the 4th, 1968, a fire in the Wimpy Bar, High Street, Winchester, on Saturday morning, resulted in the manager, Mr. John Tanner, being taken to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, when he was overcome by fumes. He had been called to the cooking area when one of the waitresses noticed a smell of burning. As he opened the door, a sheet of flame shot across the room and there was an explosion. Mr. Tanner tried to control the flames but could not reach the fire extinguisher. Mr. Peter Humphreys from the nearby Curry's store was one of the first on the scene, but he too could do little to help. The fire, which started in a fish fryer, spread to the second floor by means of a metal fume removal pipe, but was brought under control within 20 minutes by the arrival of 3 fire engines. There were no customers in the building at the time, but Mrs. Tanner said that she and her husband had to evacuate their 2 children from an upstairs room. Stephen, 13, and Judy, 12, were ushered out of the premises together with the family's 2 pet dogs. And the second item, a statement incorporating strong objections to the proposed transport bill has been issued by the Council of Winchester Chamber of Commerce after a meeting on Tuesday. The objections stem from the government's intention to set up departments in opposition to the distributive and service industries, and to remove any possible competition which may embarrass the state trading machinery.
And from 25 years ago, Friday, April the 30th, 1993, 2 articles. The first one, up to a dozen senior midwives could lose their jobs at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, a move which staff fear will threaten the standard of maternity care. But any claim that mothers would receive a second-rate service were refuted by Winchester Health Authority, which claimed some of the duties carried by top midwives could be done by lesser qualified staff. A Winchester spokeswoman at the Royal College of Midwives told the Hampshire Chronicle that 28 top-graded midwives were having to apply for 10 jobs next month. Chief Executive Rod Halls would not confirm such figures and said the number of staff in the maternity unit would be reduced from 113 to around 104. However, he said healthcare support staff could replace some senior positions. He explained there was to be a change in the skill mix following a review of the unit by professional health management consultants. And the second item, controversial plans to develop a golf course on one of Hampshire's few remaining agricultural estates were due to be discussed by Winchester City Council planners yesterday. Officers were set to recommend that the committee grant planning permission for an 18-hole golf course with clubhouse, access, parking, landscape and a new public right-of-way and access to Murden Castle on land at South Lynch, Hursley Estate, Hursley. Applicants and landowners, the St Martin's Property Corporation, wants to develop a family golf centre, which will include a teaching area, putting complex, practice ground and greenkeeper's accommodation. However, the scheme is fiercely opposed by tenant farmers Hayes Farms, Hursley Limited, who claim it will lead to a loss of good, fertile agricultural land, farm buildings, breeding grounds for rare birds, and jobs. And now we move on to Chronicle editorial comment, Nikki.
And this is headed "The Antidote to the Rise of Cynicism." The paper was published on Thursday before the voting happened. Most cynics are not as bright as they think they are, and are also usually rather arrogant. Social media is full of such people, mainly male. The rise of the internet has given a platform to idle people who have little better to do than condemn the actions of people with whom they disagree. Mostly the criticism is not based on facts, but rather on feelings and prejudices. Often there are dark hints about backhanders, almost invariably completely without evidence. These people offer nothing positive, yet the internet gives them a chance to spread their subtle form of poison. This is dangerous. Their cynicism is, at its most fundamental, an attack on truth, the underpinning of our culture and society. Today, or rather Thursday, we had the chance to go to the polling station and cast a vote at the city council elections, or several votes if you believe the keyboard warriors who smell corruption everywhere. It is important that as many of us as possible do vote. The turnout in Winchester for local elections is pretty high, certainly better than most towns and cities in the country, well above the national average. The danger of the rise of cynicism is that it undermines the democratic process, eats away at the desire to vote, and saps at those who want to make a difference. At risk of sounding unduly pious, by voting we help to produce an antidote to the poison that endangers us all.
Thank you. Now we move on to first person, Norma.
And this is "Tragic Lessons from Alfie" by Khalid Aziz. So Alfie Evans has finally died, just short of his second birthday. Thank God, some will say. Despite its inevitability, there can be no doubting the grief that now is being felt by Alfie's parents. Our hearts go out to them. We cannot truly know what they're going through, as hopefully Alfie's parents are given space to grieve in peace. Are there any lessons that can be learned from his life and untimely death? In life's lottery, who knows what will befall any of us? It is particularly difficult when children are involved. Most parents are stoical and grateful for any help they can get. I know firsthand from my involvement with Naomi House Children's Hospice just how emotions can ebb and flow from one extreme to another. There are such lows, but also within the envelope of tragedy that covers such cases, there is also scope for happiness. First-time visitors to the Children's Hospice start off apprehensive, not sure of what they are going to experience. Most quickly see that rather than places of universal sadness, hospices can provide great joy. There is true, some visitors just cannot cope. I well remember inviting a well-known local business acquaintance to look around Naomi House. He had already shown great support in an ad hoc way by buying auction prizes, attending fundraising events, and so on. I was hoping he might become more formal and regular benefactor. He arrived, visibly nervous, and it soon became clear that he just couldn't handle the place, and after no more than 15 minutes, he excused himself and disappeared. Others, usually women, were more controlled until they reach our bereavement suites. I became adept at watching for the welling tears ready to cut short my explanation of how we supported families in the days leading up to the bereavement and in those that followed. We quickly progressed to happier parts of the building. Without exception, those women moved to tears, braced up and became keen and active supporters. We never heard from the businessman again. So what was happening? My belief is that we live in a world where increasingly people want to be in control or denial. When that's not possible, they look around for someone to blame. Perhaps my businessman realised that he could not control Naomi House's inevitabilities and so went into denial and cut himself off. Some of those around Alfie Evans looked around for someone to blame. No right-minded person can believe that doctors and nurses at Alder Hey Hospital arrive at work each day looking to do evil. Not so the baying crowd, which gathered to protest at the doctor's refusal to allow Alfie to travel to Italy. They cast Alfie's medical team as demons. I saw no evidence that those protesting had the education, training or experience to make such a judgment. Medical opinion had been tested in a court before a judge skilled and experienced in weighing the evidence in such difficult cases. This too was denigrated by the mob, a mob which had scant regard for the effect their intimidating siege had on others at Alder Hey, whether they were staff or patients. Ah, but when they switched off the ventilator, Alfie continued to breathe, cited some as if this was evidence of the new wickedness on the part of the medics. This happens. It happened a number of times at Naomi House. In one case, the child rallied and was able to go home, only to die a few weeks later. End-of-life care is not as precise as many would like. If you're a believer, this is an indication of God at work. If not, it's about the body's power to fight for life. Dying remains a mysterious event. Those affected need our support, but it should be thoughtful and, above all, humble support in the face of that which none of us fully understand. R.I.P. Alfie.
Thank you. Now we have a couple of items from Belgarum, are we?
Yes, Belgarum's alternative look at the news. And the first item, Juniper Express tops poll. The public recently took to social media to name Hampshire's first gin train coming to the Watercress line on Saturday, May the 5th. The Watercress line recently gave the opportunity to its Facebook followers to create the name for the headboard of the train. Over 1,200 people voted, with Juniper Express topping the public vote with over 300 nominations. Close contenders included Tonic the Tank Engine, The Botanical, Mother's Ruin, Jim Ginface, and The Gin Reaper. Woody's Mountford, marketing manager at the Watercress line, said, "We thought it would be a fun idea to get the public to decide the name of our new gin train, and were completely taken back with the amount of people that were interested in naming the locomotive. With the popularity of the submarine vote for Boaty McBoatface, I was personally hoping Ginny McGinface would be the winner. But the public clearly know their gin and went for the more elegant fitting title of Juniper Express." Sponsored by Fevertree, in partnership with Winchester Distillery and Pulpo Negro, the event on May the 5th demonstrates gin's popularity by selling out in 10 minutes. A second event on June the 29th was even more popular, selling out in 2 minutes. And the second item, new battle of the apostrophe. Is a new dispute over the apostrophe about to erupt? It seems the punctuation is often missing from Bishop's Waltham. That's B-I-S-H-O-P apostrophe S, Waltham. A letter recently published in the Chronicle from Parish Council Chairman Barry Nicholson highlighted the issue as the council asked the city planners to put the apostrophe in its documents. Readers with long memories may recall the controversy in Kingsworthy in the mid-1990s. That's K-I-N-G-S, no apostrophe. The village was torn apart. Okay, Belgarum is exaggerating slightly, by whether the king's bit, that's K-I-N-G-S, no apostrophe, should retain an apostrophe or go without. The dispute even made the pages of some of the national newspapers. That punctuation battle was lost. But at least the village is not known as Kingsworthy, that's all one word, Kingsworthy, yet. For the record, the Chronicle-style guide says that Bishops Waltham and Bishop Sutton, Chandlers Ford and King Somborn should all have an apostrophe.
Thank you. Now I've got some what's on items and some announcements. Should I have an apostrophe in there or not? The first announcement is about our AGM, which is at 2 p.m. at Littleton Memorial Hall. 2 p.m. on Tuesday the 15th of May, that's week after next, and the former Mayor Jane Rutter is our speaker, and of course, as I think you heard from last week's recording, there will be teas and cakes available afterwards. The second item is that there is a lights up at the Mary Rose Museum in Portsmouth, because the lighting within the Mary Rose Museum is designed to create a stunning atmosphere, but for some blind, partially sighted visitors, they can find the lighting levels to be a challenge in fully appreciating the museum. So as an initiative to engage further with all visitors, the lights in the museum will be set at a higher level on the mornings of the fourth Friday of each month between 10 and 12. So the next one is on Friday the 25th of May. That's between 10 and 12 when they put the lights to a higher level. If you want to book a place for that, you can telephone 02392 812 931. That's 02392 812 931. The Macular Society is holding a roadshow in Southampton on Tuesday the 22nd of May at the Novotel in Southampton. It opens at 10:30 and runs through with lunch. Tickets are £18 each, which includes a light sandwich lunch. And you'll discover more about the treatments and ongoing research to find a cure. So if you would like to book tickets for that, telephone 01264 350551. That's the Macular Society on 01264 350551. Three short items of what's on. On Saturday, May the 12th, there's a craft fair between 9 and 5 at the Discovery Centre in Jury Street, Winchester. At the Theatre Royal, Jeremy Hardy, a comedian who regularly appears on Radio 4's The News Quiz and I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, is appearing as a stand-up routine at the Theatre Royal on May the 27th. And you can find out more about Jeremy's unique style of stand-up comedy. And the Theatre Royal box office is 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. And finally, there's a plant sale in the Brooks Centre on Saturday the 12th of May between 9:30 and 2:30, organised by Winchester Horticultural Society. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 4th of May at 5:33 a.m. and begins at 8:32 p.m. And on Wednesday the 9th of May, it ends at 5:25 a.m. and begins at 8:40 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with this recording that you receive, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And now we continue with items of general news. Nikki.
And this one headed Lucky Blackjack Recovering from Fall. A horse that got stuck in a Hampshire country drain is making a recovery. The photos show the dramatic rescue of Blackjack by firefighters after the animal got its back legs trapped in a brick-lined hole near Alsford. Emrys Harris, husband of the owner, his wife Barbara, said Blackjack continues to slowly improve. He's lame but has some pretty grim-looking cuts and contusions and a lot of swelling. Vets Michael Rejek and Shane Fui from Hampshire Equine Clinic in Alton are happy with progress. Blackjack, nearly 20 years old, had been grazing in a field at Titchburn on Friday, April the 20th. His collapse early one morning presented firefighters with a big problem, as he is 16.2 hands high and weighs around 700 kilos, three quarters of a ton. Mr. Harris of Ovington said, "By an astonishing piece of both poor and good fortune, both his hind legs, rather than just one, became jammed in an 8-foot-deep drain in his paddock at Grange Farm. The drain has been in place for decades, and the sturdy cover had only ever seemed to be completely solid and secure, but suddenly gave way underneath him, dropping him instantly, tightly wedging his legs, dangling some way above the bottom of the drain. Good job it was both legs, as had it been only one, there is a good chance he would have broken a leg or his pelvis and been necessarily destroyed on the spot. The animal rescue team thought for some time that they would be unable to get him out. They could not at first get a strap underneath his belly because the drain surround is made of reinforced concrete, which they had to dig beneath and chisel out. Mr. Harris added, "Badly grazed, cut and bruised, Blackjack continues to make a steady recovery. He's a calm, gentle animal and deserves to do well. Barbara would like to thank Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service and the animal rescue team for their skill and dedication in saving Blackjack's life." And there are a series of photographs that are pretty dramatic, I can tell you, with this large, really large black horse. Literally half his body has disappeared down his hole. And he's being held sort of by a halter while they wait for the people to come. And then there's a photograph of him on his back with all four legs in the air and straps tied around all the legs and all the firemen and rescue people holding him up, having obviously just pulled him out of the hole. And then a nicer picture of him all done up beautifully following the South Downs Bloodhounds last year. Beautiful horse. And another with Barbara Harris holding him in his very smart rug. Very intelligent, lovely face, and I think very lucky that they got him out.
Fish Lake Meadows' approval draws heavy criticism from Trust. The decision to approve planning for 73 homes to a Romsey Nature Reserve has drawn criticism from Hampshire's wildlife bosses. As previously reported, committee members had rejected the initial application to build the homes on the land next to Fish Lake Meadows Nature Reserve. That meant Test Valley Borough Council's Planning Control Committee considered the proposals and approved the plans lodged by Stratlands Estates. The decision to accept the plans has drawn strong criticism from Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, who have strongly opposed the initial plans. It means that up to 73 dwellings with access can be built on the land west of Cooperham Lane. Reserves manager at the Wildlife Trust, Martin de Returo, said they remained worried about the scheme. He said, "We remain deeply concerned that this development risks further pressure on the precious wild space at Fish Lake Meadows Nature Reserve. We must now see a concerted effort from the local council and the developer to ensure that there are adequate measures in place to address these issues and offset the likely impacts on the local natural environment." The council has initially denied the application, which initially listed 94 homes. They spoke of their concern that the appeal by the applicants could lead to a cost being awarded against the council. Head of planning, Paul Jackson, said the matter would need to go to the Planning Control Committee, who then voted in favour of the application. Stratland Estates, while not responding to comment on the approval, had previously said that they were disappointed, having addressed the initial concerns from the councillors back in January. Speaking at the time, a statement said, "Having resolved members' only concern that the applicant is extremely disappointed that committee disregarded the advice of their officers and expert advisers."
Abbey history is becoming clearer. Hyde 900's 4-day community archaeological dig at King Alfred's last resting place has exceeded all expectations, say organisers. "When we started digging on Friday," says dig organiser David Sperling, No one could have foreseen that we would uncover buried evidence that would completely change our understanding of the layout of the cloisters of Winchester's lost Hyde Abbey. Undaunted by wind or rain, more than 150 local people, including children from St. Bede Primary School, have dug, sieved, cleaned, and recorded finds. And Sunday's open day brought a stream of visitors to the gardens of King Alfred Terrace. Archaeologist Professor Martin Biddles said, "Hyde 900's second year digging in private gardens on the site of Hyde Abbey has been a tremendous success, thanks to the extraordinary enthusiasm and generosity of the owners of the gardens, whose huts have been moved and lawns and beds dug up. The south range of the Abbey's cloister, probably the site of the monks' refectory, has been located at last, a little further north than expected, helping to correct the outline guest plan of the Abbey's cloister. And it looks, at this moment, that very important fragments of sculpture from the Norman cloister, recycled as building rubber in later alterations to the south range, are about to be found. These sculpted pieces appear to be more of the Norman voussoirs or carved cloister arch stones that were discovered last year. On Friday, at the start of the dig, archaeologists were hoping to uncover further examples of these incredibly significant stones. Towards the end of day four, they were certain to have found at least another nine. Over the weekend, the emergence of the detailed structure of one of the monastic walls has told a great deal. Dr. John Crook, consultant archaeologist to Winchester Cathedral, said, "We're now sure we've discovered the monastic refectory and that there was a major reconstruction in the 14th century, which previously we didn't know much about. Not only of one of the most important communal buildings, but also of the cloister itself." House owner Chris Pryor, whose garden has been dug up, said, "It's worth it. You can always put your shed and your garden back together, but you might not get the chance to see this again." Along the street, in a trench in the garden of number 10, Roman plaster has been found on a mysterious wall feature that seems to run at an angle to the abbey buildings. And there are photographs. One photograph of visitors viewing the work on Sunday at the King Alfred's Terrace, with a man in a ditch making notes, two young children in another ditch on their knees examining what appears to be a find. Another two children, Kyra and Ezra, hard at work in one of the trenches with trowel and shovel and muddy wellies. Dr. John Crook recording developments in Trench 8 with Chris Pryor, the garden owner, and Ben Goddard. Professor Martin Biddle watching Dr. John Crook taking a photograph of the trench with Hyde 900's Caroline Scott, tile expert David Stewart, and house owner Chris Pryor. And an impression of the Hyde Abbey cloisters by Ross Lovett, building consultant. A black and white pencil impression. Very nice buildings too, they were. And Professor Martin Biddle, a close-up photograph of him in conversation with the dig organiser, David Sperling. All very interesting.
And this headed, "Criminals complete 17,000 hours of graft. Offenders working in their communities after being sentenced have contributed thousands of hours in Hampshire. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Rehabilitation Company, HIOW-CRC, which is responsible for supervising offenders on community payback, delivered more than 17,000 hours in the first quarter of 2018. With the national wage standing at £7.83, that equates to work worth £135,000. Those ordered to take on unpaid community payback work participate in a range of manual tasks, including removing graffiti, litter picking, clearing parks and cemeteries, renovating buildings, and work in charity shops. Magistrates or judges can sentence offenders to carry out anything from 40 to 300 hours of unpaid work as part of their order. Community payback must include a minimum of a day's work, lasting at least 7 hours, once a week. People can also be sentenced to intensive community payback, 20 hours of work every week. And there is a photograph of three men in high-vis jackets with on their back community paybacks. They're not going to get away with looking like they're just workers. And they are in the process of removing graffiti and repainting a wall which had a sort of nice, not a fresco, but a nice painting on it. Unlike America, where they have to dress entirely in orange from top to toe.
Serving up a charity feast. A charity event run by Eastleigh students raised thousands of pounds for those suffering from cancer. There were more than 160 people at the charity dinner held at Botley Park Hotel, organised and run by Eastleigh College students. Second year events manager pupils were responsible for the planning, marketing and organising the event. First and second year catering students created the dishes for the evening menu, which included a cured mackerel starter, a supreme of chicken, Maine, and a chocolate, pistachio and raspberry dessert. The meal was followed by a raffle and silent auction, which raised a total of £2,295.90 for the Wessex Cancer Trust. The event was the first one on this scale organised and run by students in a location outside of Eastleigh College facilities. A spokesman for the college said, "The event was the largest to date for Eastleigh College students. It was an opportunity for the students to make their course relevant, to experience what a related field in the industry is really like, as well as building their confidence. Students were able to see what they can achieve with hard work and focus." Student Rebecca Lee from Romsey said, "It was so satisfying to see the finished product after all our hard work. To see our team serving the food to the large amount of attendees was really impressive. For me, this event was really built my confidence and experience, something that I certainly think will help me to enter into this industry." And there are two small pictures, two of the Eastleigh students serving the food, and another picture of three students preparing all the food.
Lesser spotted flytipper moves into city centre. And that's not a woodpecker. Usually it is a rural phenomenon, the nighttime dumping of trash by the side of a country lane in the middle of nowhere, often somewhere in the Meon Valley. But the shy nocturnal flytipper looks to be extending his habitat into urban areas, much like the foxes. Perhaps emboldened by the cover of darkness, the flytipper now perhaps cannot be bothered to find some remote part of the countryside. Instead, he dumps his rubbish closer to home. A pile of dirty mattresses have been found dumped by the side of the road in Winchester city centre. They were discovered in Park Avenue, just metres away from the entrance to Winchester School of Art, and 2 minutes' walk from the High Street last week. But the City Council says it will be difficult to catch the culprit. A spokesman said, "When we are provided with evidence of who the flytippers are and where the waste came from, we will, wherever appropriate, investigate, and we currently have a 100% success rate in regards to flytipping prosecutions. In this case, however, we have not been contacted by any witnesses, which means investigating this fly tip is very difficult. But if anyone saw the incident, Please, can they get in touch with Winchester City Council and report it to the environment team on 0300 300 0013. That's 0300 300 0013. And the seven filthy mattresses dumped at the side of the road in a 20 mile an hour speed zone are shown in the photograph. So if anyone has any information to report on seeing those mattresses being dumped, please get in touch with that number I gave.
Major new restaurant announces opening day. The Ivy, Winchester Brasserie, has announced it will be opening on Thursday, May the 24th. To celebrate the announcement, the restaurant team enjoyed a toast with the mayor, Councillor David McLean, or McLean, at the Buttercross, just yards from the Ivy Winchester Brasserie. Team members include General Manager Reza Najafi and Head Chef Louis Gonzalez were joined by waiting staff to celebrate the announcement. The Ivy will offer all-day dining for up to 150 covers, with guests able to enjoy the main restaurant and bar as well as a Parisian-style terrace during the summer. It will offer a wide selection of British and internationally inspired dishes, from shepherd's pie to champagne afternoon teas. Sarah Plunkett, operations manager at the Ivy Collection, said, "Winchester is the perfect setting for our newest addition. We continue to grow regionally with a number of sites outside London." And there's a picture of the aforementioned people all standing in front of the Pentis and the mayor and the manager shaking hands.
Recreating bygone bus trips. Winchester-based bus charity Friends of King Alfred Buses has confirmed details of its annual King Alfred Running Day in and around the city on Bank Holiday Monday, May the 7th. A bevy of traditional King Alfred buses, up to 87 years old, will be taking passengers on traditional routes throughout Winchester and Southampton on Bank Holiday Monday, May the 7th, in company with some 20 or so buses from other local operators. Free bus services will operate from Winchester Broadway starting at 9:30 a.m. until 5 p.m. covering most of the traditional King Alfred routes, plus those of neighbouring historic bus companies such as Aldershot and District and Hants and Dorset. The independently owned King Alfred Bus Company operated until 1973, and there will be the usual transport hub in Winchester Guildhall, open between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., while at the Cattle Market car park, there will be a static display of historic vehicles with a frequent free bus service to and from central Winchester. Plentiful car parking will be available at St Catherine's Park and Ride, with frequent free buses to and from the city centre.
A novel approach to body image. In a world preoccupied with appearance, Deborah Coughlin will be discussing a radical new way of approaching body image. She will be talking at the Railway, Winchester, on Sunday, May the 13th, on the subject, How to Stop Pretending You Love Your Body. Do you love the way you look? Do you spend time trying to? Do you pretend that you do or need convincing? In this talk, Ms. Coughlin will take her audience through the theories and facts behind why having a body can be so tricky. She will discuss the pitfalls of faking body positivity and the radical steps we can take to change our body vision. Deborah Coughlin is an artistic director, producer, writer, and presenter. She is the founder and director of feminist punk collection Gaggle, writes for Stylist magazine, and is currently touring her theatrical production Yap, Yap, Yap. There will be a collection point for the Homeless Period, Southampton. at this event. Donations of sanitary towels and tampons will be distributed to homeless and vulnerable women in the area. There will also be an opportunity to win a copy of Charlotte Cooper's book, Fat Activism, a Radical Social Movement. Raffle tickets are £1, with the proceeds going to the homeless period. Tickets are £8 in advance.
And this one, top award for local wine. A vineyard near Winchester has scooped a major prize. Rheims English Sparkling was awarded one of 16 gold medals, with the 10th highest score of thousands of entrants from 26 wine-producing regions of the world at the London Wine Competition. Augusta Rheims, vineyard owner, with her husband Robert, said, "We knew our classic was in with a good chance. It is delicious, with heaps of apple and stone fruit, a layer of toasty notes, intense yet smooth and enjoyable." Their 10-year vineyard, part of Grange Farm at Tichborne, is devoted to the classic sparkling wine varieties on chalk slopes near Hinton Ampner and Cheriton, and the family have been growing grapes since 2011. A bottle costs just under £30, and it has won over international critiques for its drinkability, packaging, presentation and value for money. The London Wine Competition was launched by the Beverage Trade Network this year and attracted entries from around the world. Whilst a number of Old World wines from Italy and France scored highly, there were notable surprises, with two gold medals from England, including Classic Rheims English Sparkling, at number 10. Rheims Classic is available from Naked Grape, Alsford, Fareham Wine, Cellar and Fareham, and Oriel Wines, Hartley Whitney, and online at www.rheims, that's R-A-I-M-E-S, .co.uk/shop. The vineyard is a member of Vineyards of Hampshire, which was recently set up to promote local wine. The other members are Cottonworth near Andover, 30 acres, Danebury near Stockbridge, 7 acres, Exton Park in the Meon Valley, 55, Hambledon near Droxford, 50, and the oldest commercial vineyard in Hampshire, set up in 1952, Hattingley, 60 acres near Lower Weald, Alsford, and Jenkin Place, Bentley near Alton. The Hampshire chalk soil is very similar to that in Champagne, France. And there is a photograph of Gussie and Robert Rheims in front of a very smart Land Rover embellished with their Rheims trademark.
Crisis for the nightingale across the whole of Hampshire. I am standing at a stunning location in the depths of Hampshire countryside, and all around is rich birdsong. The warm April sun is shining, and in the distance I can hear chiff-chaff, blackcap, robin, blackbird, and overhead the first few swallows are hawking for insects. But I'm here for one very special bird, the nightingale. Not long ago, you would have to visit commons or shrub woodland across much of England and seen this fantastic bird, but not in 2018. Hampshire is one of the few counties where the nightingale can still be both seen and heard. The nightingale is the size of a small thrush, but unlike either song or missel thrush, it has no spots on its chest. It has a copper-brown back and tail that glints and shines in good light conditions and an incredibly rich song. It is undoubtedly the song that makes this bird world famous. A stunning cacophony of rich warbles, mimicry, croaks, squeaks and whistles interspersed with brief pauses as if it's trying to plan what to sing next. It will sometimes sing a few lines and then apparently get stuck, repeating notes over and over again, like a musician attempting perfection before standing on the stage and performing a new repertoire. Nightingale arrived from West Africa in mid-April. The males sing, the female normally croak, a bit like a grumpy toad. Once paired off, the males abruptly stop singing and vanish into thick cover. By early June, the female will, if left undisturbed, produce one or two young. By late July, they are already starting to depart, and by middle of August, they are making their perilous way south. As with much of our wildlife, nightingale are in trouble. from perhaps several hundred pairs as little as 30 years ago, there may be as few as 25 pairs left in the entire county. The reasons are complex. Nightingale like scrubby, messy woodlands and commons, and even big gardens. They hate things being tidied up, so thrive where there is a tangle of undergrowth mixed with open wildflower, rich meadow and woodland. There is surprisingly little of that type of habitat left. Most site owners like to tidy things up, and the grass gets cut, bushes removed, wildflowers displaced, and the sound of the nightingale becomes a relic of the past.
All cyclists welcome on mass ride on May the 12th. A mass cycle ride aims to help promote cycling in Winchester. Organisers are inviting people to join the bike train at pickup points across the city centre on the morning of Saturday, May the 12th. There will be a circuit or two around the one-way system before a gathering in Abbey Gardens at Broadway. From 10 a.m, the pickup points will be in Kingsworthy, no apostrophe, Headbourne-worthy, Hairstock, Week, Badger Farm and Stanmore. At around 10:45 a.m, there will be a lap or two of the city centre on the one-way system, including St George's Street, Drury Street and North Walls. From 11 a.m, the cyclists will gather in Abbey Gardens for guest speakers, bike doctor courtesy of Bespoke Biking, and a celebratory photograph. The organisers said the ride will help create a vision of a better Winchester, where a critical mass of cyclists makes cycling safer and more enjoyable. Our aim is to get more people cycling more often. It is part of newly launched Cycle Winchester, promoting cycling as a convenient, healthy and inexpensive way to get around Winchester, which reduces congestion, pollution and makes Winchester a better place to live, work and visit. Cycling is on the up across the country, with increasing membership of clubs such as VC Venta, sales in bike shops and businesses for Bespoke Biking. An ongoing issue in Winchester is the large number of hills, with the city centre lying in the Itchen Valley. And there's a photograph of dozens of cyclists, young and old, with backpacks on and crash helmets, on the fun run for the family at Winchester Cycle Fest last year.
Teenage threats. Teenager Brandon Atkins has been ordered to pay compensation after being convicted of threatening behaviour in Winchester. Atkins, 18, of Freshwater, Isle of Wight, had denied threatening Usman Jatta in Winchester on January 11th, but was convicted after a trial at Basingstoke Magistrates Court. Atkins also admitted the same charge against Anne Kelly at Winchester Discovery Centre on January the 12th and against Daniel Cottle at an address in St George's Street on January the 12th as well. He also pleaded guilty to criminal damage to furniture owned by the City Council on February the 6th and at the Trinity Centre in Derngate on February the 16th to the value of £1,000. Magistrates ordered Atkins pay £85 compensation to Trinity and imposed a community order for up to 20 days rehabilitation activity requirements, as well as 45 hours unpaid work. There was no order for a victim surcharge because of his lack of means. And I'll just quickly read another one, different sort of rat. Bait boxes to tackle rat issue. A council is working to combat a rat problem as quickly as possible after community leaders complained. Test Valley Borough Council has said that it understands Valley Park residents' concerns about the issue after complaints were made at Badsley councillor Alan Dowden. According to Councillor Dowden, residents aren't happy with the cleanliness of the area and the number of rodents. He said it was a problem that needed a joint response between Test Valley Borough Council and Eastleigh Borough Council. He said, I have spoken to many council officers on both sides in an attempt to sort this problem out. Many residents have said to me that nothing seems to be getting done. I believe rats have been in homes and other areas near to children. It's not safe. Test Valley said that the pest control officers have been baiting the areas, with Councillor Dowden saying that Hiltonbury was an area that had been reported to him as a main issue.
Flash mob choir on stage and platform. Excuse me, I do apologise. Shoppers were entertained by a series of surprise performances from a choir on the platform of Horsford train station on the Watercress line. Choral group Luminosa performed a selection of songs including Verne's Electric Sanctus and his Messe Solennelle. The flash mob was met with enthusiastic applause by passers-by throughout the day. The train station has been there for around 150 years, but it is probably fate to say that it is the first such event in its history. One onlooker said, it's so lovely to see the choir clearly so passionate about what they do. To come here and sing for our shoppers in a hurry is a real treat. Their performance made us all stop and take a moment to listen. It was very special. The artistic director of Luminosa, Rebecca Abbott, said, both the choir and I found it really enjoyable to sing in front of the crowds in Horsford. Everyone was extremely positive about our surprise performances, especially the people disembarking at the Watercress Line train station, and it was a privilege to be able to add some singing to their day out. The group, based in Hollybourne near Alton, will be performing Rutter's Requiem, Verne's Messe Sonnelle, and Duffel's Requiem, as well as music by Foray, at this, their inaugural concert on Saturday, May the 12th, at St John's Church, off West Street, Horsford. Richard Pearce, international concert organist, will be performing alongside the choir. Tickets are still available at 6 West in Horsford and Waterstones Bookshop in Alton, also available online. The Watercress Line, so named because of its historical cargo, opened in the 1860s and ran between Horsford and Alton. It closed in 1973 but was gradually reopened through the 1970s and 80s. And there's a picture of the choir singing on the platform of the Watercress Line with an old-fashioned telephone, red telephone box in the background and people watching them. And they're all very enthusiastically singing by the look of it. It's wonderful.
Thank you. So that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.